welcome to this week's episode of the Green for Health podcast with Angela Hayes.
Hello and welcome to Green for Health, where today I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Marion Lynch, who is a registered nurse, registered mental nurse, global health consultant and researcher. Marion specialises in public health, in nursing and system strengthening with regards to equality and clinical leadership. She's proud to be a nurse and has taken her nursing expertise into many roles in healthcare all over the world. She concentrates on global health and inequalities, gender inequalities, climate action, equality and diversity. She's also does some volunteering in her spare time. So welcome. Thank you very much for joining me, Marion.
Hello, lovely to be here. And thank you so much for the opportunity to engage with nurses across the world to ensure that we improve care and the standards of care everywhere.
Thank you very much. So can I take you back a little and ask you to... I mean, you know, your portfolio is massive. As I say, I was trying to compile all the stuff that you've done in a few sentences so that it didn't take up the entire chat time that we had. And it was quite difficult, I have to tell you. But can you, if you're able to summarise your journey so far, just, you know, in a few minutes, can you do that for us, Marion? Is that possible even?
Yes. Yeah, okay, so let's transport us back to the early 80s when you can hear Wham singing and nurses wearing buckles and hats. And I started as a student nurse in Oxford, 1982. Absolutely loved it. Didn't really know what to expect, but once I was in nursing, I loved it until the moment that somebody said to me, oh, you can't do that because you're a nurse. And that kind of jarred with me. And I ignored it,
yes,
obviously.
Yes.
And my year as a staff nurse was with young people who were living with and dying from leukemia. Back in the 80s, there was more dying from than living with. And I realised that the care that I was able to offer could be better. So I went to train as a mental health nurse to look at the psychological support people had. And then I ran away from nursing and went travelling across the world, nursing, working in other places, because I was young and naive. And I came back 4 years later, having had a ball, and thought I could go back into nursing in the UK. But I couldn't, because everything I'd been doing elsewhere was out of scope. So again, it came, you can't do that because... And so I never did go back into uniform until COVID, and went in to study public health and then became a system manager, all the time having that sense of nurses can do so much more and do so much more. And because of the way that the system has been designed, they're not enabled to, and we're not enabled to. So 24 years ago, I had to break that and come out of the identity of nursing and was invited to be a GP tutor. And I just had a baby, obviously, was working full time, obviously, and invited to apply to be a GP tutor. And I said, well, you know, a few reasons I can't do that. One, I'm not a doctor. Two, I've got a 6-month-old baby. And three, I've got a full-time job. Anyway, I applied, got the post, and really had the opportunity to bring the lens of nursing and patient safety, quality, etc., into the curriculum for general practice. Did that, plus teaching all professions, running learning sets for almost 20 years, alongside being a deputy medical director. Again, that was the time when it was about what you can do rather than the university you went to that defined your employment. And along the way, I did my PhD and a couple of master's degrees because I'm a complete nerd as well, and constantly studied until 20, 19 when I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm going to go to Zambia and take 6 months out and do a fellowship working with the Ministry of Health there. And that changed my life because I realised that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. Came back, handed in my notice, left my work with the NHS, and then COVID happened. So I was abroad at the time, got back and worked at the Nightingale in the teaching programme. And that's when I realised that once again, nurses' worth was not being noticed, and started my mission then to make that change. And since then, I've worked as an independent person in research and working for charities on projects that and programmes that look at how nurses can be part of the future solution, nurses' role in service redesign and delivery, education, and many more elements that have come now to the fruition, where I was nominated as a Gates Foundation Sustainable Development Goals goalkeeper. And what that meant is I went to New York when the United Nations Assembly was running, and I was the only nurse in the room. There were only 200 of us nominated across the world. And I made some grave errors, grave social errors, because I come from a different place, having worked in the NHS forever, and not having a power suit, and not having the social capital, we call it, of these sort of movers and shakers that have been changing the world. But what I learnt was nurses are just the same. We just need to get up off the chair and fill our space and show what we do in the same way as other professions and organisations are showing what they do. So that's what that's what my mission is now, to enable nurses to show what they do in terms of delivering all of the sustainable development goals. But also, rather than say, you know, get your own chair or make a seat at the table, actually start to examine the structures that keep us out of the room, the social structures, the biases and social norms that stop nurses, predominantly female, speaking up, that make people who are already in power not invite nurses into decision making. And my mission now is to make all of this happen somehow. That's too long, I'm sure.
No, I'm absolutely fascinated, and I've just loads of questions have popped into my mind as you've been speaking there, but the one that seems to be, or that I think is really interesting, is you saying about not having that kind of social standing to be confident in those kind of forum. And do you think that is because of our generally speaking, the majority of the nursing workforce are made up of females?
I think that's a contributing factor. I think take one or a few steps back from that. I think there's a lack of insight into what nurses do that comes from a number of those areas. So there are blind spots created, and those blind spots are caused historically by the way that health systems are designed, that have been designed in a way that is sort of a biomedical model. There's blind spots that are because of the social way that our system in the West has developed, and that does have a gender lens, puts men in the decision-making space and the decision-making places. And then there's also that professional hierarchy where nurses are deemed to not be have the professional standing. So history, social structures, and the sort of the history of nursing all contribute to this invisibility. So the invisibility of what nurses do, except at those life and death moments, you know, everybody remembers that life and death moment when the nurse was there. But actually their invisibility in, and our invisibility in population health projects or political contribution means that the worth of nurses is experienced but rarely seen. So imagine if nurses were actually seen as the cement that was holding all those building blocks of of healthcare, of universal healthcare, of health systems together. But because we're the glue, we're not seen. But pull us away and it'll all collapse.
Right, that is really, really interesting. Really interesting. Thank you very much for just talking about all of that. And my word, what an interesting career you've had so far. And it's only in the last few years that you've really found what you want to do. Is that right?
Yes, it is. So all of our sort of pivots come from personal moments or personal responses to professional moments. So personally, my life changed when my sister got sick and my sister died, and I looked after her, and she was only 49, and she said to me, you've had a career all your life. Your son calls you other, not mother. You're jesting, but I was on that career path, constantly on that career path. That's evidence in my CV. And she said, what if you just changed? What if you spent a day a week living for me and doing what I would do if I was still here? I get emotional when I say it. And so I did. So I changed my focus and purpose, and she was a special needs teacher and a foster mum, and that's when we set up a very small charity. But more importantly, I pivoted, and instead of waiting to do what I wanted to do until kids had left home, the job was stable, the NHS was funded, yada yada yada, I moved that view of time to now. And if not now, it's not going to happen. And so I changed my whole philosophy of why I went to work and what I wanted to do. And from that, just shifting that perspective, brought that idea of wait till you're retired, wait till everything's done, right to the here and now. And it was amazing. I can't say it wasn't traumatic. No. Still got, I've still got a mortgage to pay and electricity bills, and you might hear the printer going because one of the children's printing something out right now. But as nurses, and including myself, I was socialised to just get on with it, keep going. The next day, the next project, the next patient, etc. Instead of turning that caring lens onto myself and saying, actually, what do I want to be remembered for? What do I want? What's the difference that I came into nursing to do? What does that actually look like now? And if it's not happening, how can I make it happen? And the big driver was, no one else is going to make it happen. There is no job to go to. There is no job description for my life. There is no trust or ICB or non-government organisation that's got the same mission as me. So what is my mission? And then how can I make it happen? And I had a great coach. I've since become a coach, obviously, because it made a big difference to help me focus. The focus of my work and the locus of control as to actually what can I control and then do it.
That's really interesting. So a lot of what you're saying there is echoed in how I've got involved in the sustainability work that I'm currently doing. So as I said before we kind of met on the podcast, my role is a nurse specialist in palliative and supportive care, but I've also do some of the sustainability work in the trust, and that happened as a result of me just thinking, what are we doing in the organisation with regards to the environment? And I contacted our CEO and just asked that question. And then bit by bit, I've gradually got myself involved in more and more things. So almost writing my own job description doing this. I mean, I have a very, very supportive manager And my manager's manager is very keen for me to drive this agenda. So I'm in a very privileged position. But I think a lot of what you've said there, Marion, is you know what needs to be done. You know that it's a value. You know that you're driven to make those changes. So therefore, you're galvanised to you know, open up your computer and make those phone calls and have those conversations. And it doesn't feel like work. I've said this before, it doesn't feel like work. And I'm sure, is that how you feel when you're doing the projects that you're very driven to do?
Yes, it's not work, it's a mission. And I sort of back away from using the word mission because that brings religious connotations and all those images of nursing that we want to undo. So actually this is a purpose that I'm on, and I've got a few years to retirement and a few more on the planet. What I think is, what's my legacy? What do I leave behind? And I don't want to leave a sort of a rusty old buckle from the 80s and some worn out shoes or a bad back and a poor use of policy. But what I want is sort of to be able to raise the voices that of nurses doing amazing work at the moment. Take that in nursing, we call it a strengths-based approach, you know, with our patients. What can you do rather than what can't you do? To change the culture. You know, newspapers today are talking about merging and changing doctors' and nurses' roles. When you think, oh my goodness, you know, as we're just about to go into, we've got, you know, more and more leaving, et cetera, et cetera. So let's harness that opportunity. What could we change in terms of nurses' roles that enable nurses to feel joy in work, feel valued, and others to recognise their worth? And how can we actually start in a different place? Because if you start differently, you'll get a different outcome. If we start where we are, it's all a bit seen as negative, or nurses as, you know, kind of heroes. That's not the place to start. Actually, let's start where nurses are actually doing an amazing voice of amazing stuff, and start to tell the stories, which is society's oldest way of sort of oldest change model, to inform a new narrative, a different way, shine a light on nurses doing amazing 21st century nursing. And that way we can undo unhelpful narratives of task-based or passive, or you know, all the other elements of nursing that we want to actually move away from. I remember doing some research on the European experience of nurses through COVID across Europe, and everybody said what's happening to us and what we're doing is nothing like what they say is happening in the papers. We're getting on with our diabetes checks, we're getting on with baby checks, we're getting on with looking after people who are living and dying at home. Not everyone's working on COVID wards, but everybody's having to live somehow with COVID, and we are doing it, and we are doing it well. And we really wanted to shine a light on that ability of nurses to, you know, pivot in their work, which we know nurses do all the time, using that tacit knowledge, using their public health knowledge, but more importantly, beyond that way of knowing, that element of nursing when someone says, oh, I don't know what the nurse did, they were just there, they sat with me, they were there, they helped me understand, you know, that presence, that active presence that a nurse can have in a situation, personal or in a project that changes their way of looking at things, or even policy that just brings people back to, this is about health, this is about people being able to understand their own role in their health, and this is about society recognising what it does to other to people's health as well. So it's not about what nurses know or about what nurses do, it's about how nurses are seen and how nurses function in 21st century care.
And in doing all of those things in getting nurses to work differently and rethink the way we deliver nursing care, and as rethink the way we're viewed by people, then surely we're going to create a more sustainable nursing workforce to keep us going, keep our future generations looked after well, because we're going to be creating nurses who are very fulfilled in what they do and motivated to carry on doing, rather than what we're seeing now where they're leaving in droves, retiring early, not returning.
I think we look at how other businesses and, you know, let's look at health as a business, an economic lens on this. Look at how other businesses retain their workforce. They are constantly looking at what is it we can do to keep you.
Yes.
And our health business doesn't seem to take that other than maybe a few peripheral offers that doesn't help your quality of life necessarily. Most nurses, again, in research I did on changing how outpatients happen across Wales, the nurses I interviewed would stay and were staying because the way that they were given autonomy to change services suddenly appeared, and they were able to take responsibility for the changes they knew needed to happen and then implement them and had the support to make that happen. And as a result of that, nobody started talking, no one was talking about the hours they worked or anything. They were just talking about the difference they wanted to make. Nobody talked about issues of, you know, I'm a band six, I'm a band seven. Everybody talked about the patient's positive benefit of having this new service. It's a different way of looking at the value and the worth of our workforce. And if we stop looking at nurses as a workforce and a cost, which is how we are looked at in on an Excel spreadsheet, and instead look at as a force for health in that kind of a sociological model, we would harness what nurses do and share what they do in a different way. And that's what I'm doing at the moment. I'm on a mission to gather up the experiences, linking with Nursing Now program, which is 60,000 nurses across the world, hopefully linking with the RCN, to shine a light on what nurses are doing to deliver the sustainable development goals. And the RCN did a few case studies a few years ago, and the International Council of Nurses did a few studies a year ago, and everybody's doing a few studies, a few stories. Well, actually, if you, out of 17 million nurses and 17 across the world and 17 sustainable development goals and 7 years to get to those goals in 2030, what could we create that would enable every nurse to do one thing for themselves and do it well, be it on climate change? What could they do in their workplace that actually addressed a climate issue or a sustainability issue? On gender equity, what is one thing they could do? We need to move beyond the sustainable development goal of 3, which is health and wellbeing, and recognise that nurses are working on peace to address conflict. You know, they're working on environmental health and sanitation to address infectious diseases. You know, we're everywhere. We're just not seen. So I want us to be seen. So, you know, as part of this podcast, I'd love us to start to develop, change the, you know, in the media world, they called it flip the narrative last year. I thought, oh, goodness, I put flip the narrative on the front of an NHS policy, I think I'd just be, you know, flipped out of the room. But actually, what I'm trying to do is shift the way we look at things and go, you know, look, you know, here I am, fill my space as a nurse. This is what I'm doing. This is the difference it's making. And for me to make a bigger difference in this area, beyond the ward, beyond the bedside, beyond the illness narrative, I need some help. What is it that we can create that is that help?
Yes. Wow, that's absolutely fascinating, Marion. Really, really fascinating. And I think a lot of the things that you've raised there about the work that's going on, so, you know, about infectious diseases, about not just about climate emergency and sustainability, but a lot of the things that I'm trying to do and the words that are coming up all seem to kind of overlap and echo. So when you're saying about conflict and economic stability, all of the things that you try and do with regards to sustainability all fit into these. And if we can make our planet more sustainable, then the areas that people live will be sustainable, so they don't have to move, they're not forced out of their homes as a result of crises, that they're not then at risk of all of the problems with regards to their health, with their social health, their economic health. There's just so much overlap in all of those areas, and it's trying to kind of join them up, I think. And I think probably what goes on is there's lots of bits of work going on in little pockets, but there isn't this joined up approach when there's clearly overlap in what we're all trying to do.
Yeah. And, you know, anecdote is all very well on a single PowerPoint, and we talk about, you know, the impact of a patient story and a professional story. A collective, a choir of these actions that nurses are doing has far more impact, reaches far more people, and cannot be ignored. Yeah. So the metaphors I try and use are about you know, voice and light, and rather than machine models and all those, you know, and military models. So that's another way that we can shift language in what we talk about. So I want to create a choir of stories that sustain us, that sustain health and sustain our planet, and the people who can speak loudly on this are the most, and therefore be believed and followed, are the most trusted profession. Nurses are the most female profession. Nurses.
Yes, yes, we've been doing it for the 20th year on the trot, haven't we? So yeah. I was just about to say that. Yeah,
we're the most female profession, and across the world, the health profession that most people see are nurses. So we're the most connected profession. So whilst we're you know, personally hands-on and visible with people, and everyone will remember the nurse when da-da-da, life and death situations, we're not in the policy in the and the papers in a different way. And that's down to us. We've got to shift our own energy here. So if not you, who? If not now, when? Those are the questions that galvanize me to action each day. And if anybody would like to join on this mission, particularly you know, really the creating some scenarios of in 2030 what would good look like, as well as the descriptors of what are we doing now, we can actually build 7 years worth of efforts to get to that aspiration of in 2030 nurses' involvement in sustainability. What does it look like? We can get there. If we don't build it, someone will build something for us, and we absolutely know as nurses, if we're not involved in the design, it's not going to fit. That's not going to work, yeah. And no one's going to want it.
The other thing that I wanted to say as well in all of that is that not only are we there, we're seen, we're trusted, we also have usually pretty honed, communication skills. We're normally very good communicators when I can get my words out.
Yeah.
You know, and so using those skills to get across our message and canvas opinion and harness enthusiasm, yeah, surely is very helpful.
Yeah, we're good communicators when we feel that we know what we're talking about. And that's very important to know your stuff. We're not such good communicators when we feel disenfranchised from what's going on, or have a bit of imposter syndrome. And I think there's an opportunity now to go, yes, I do know what I'm talking about, and I'm well prepared to go into this clinical meeting or this board meeting. And every single time I'm in a space, I will speak. And that, you know, there's a commitment. Often nurses have been socialized into not speaking up, you know, being part of the I can't even say the word anymore, the invisibility of it. That's, you know, still again, actually speak, you know, feet firmly on the floor, chin firmly in the air, and speak, because your voice is as valid as everyone else's. And just speaking on behalf of those who can't speak, vulnerable people or your patients who need you to. But there's our communication skill as well. Go out of your comfort zone. 10% out of your comfort zone each time. What's the worst that could happen?
And you find that, so I can see myself in a lot of these when I think about my role as a matron in the trust, and having to be at, you know, very senior meetings and feeling very much like you've described. And as I've started to do the work on this, I find that I push myself outside of my comfort zone more and more. And then gradually that 10% that was originally in your, you know, the outside of your comfort zone becomes your comfort zone, and then you can then extend it, and before you know it, you're quite confident in speaking and putting across your opinion, and your comfort zone becomes bigger and bigger.
And you know, there are some top tips you could take away, because all of this, if a nurse is listening to this after an exhausting day, listening in the car going, yeah, it's all very well for that lot, but you know, in my work, it's like this. So there's some top tips I've learned. When you're in a meeting with people that maybe you're new to it or etc., never sit next to the door. Never. Because if you sit next to the door, you'll suddenly be asked to or volunteer to pop out to get wadda wadda wadda, you know. Never be the person who sits next to the door. You might be asked to write notes, but once you're writing notes, you're out of the group. So
don't volunteer
to, and if you're asked to say, and you feel that you must say, this you know, we can take turns in doing that. I'll do it this time. Let's nominate who will do it next time before we leave the room. So just,
that's a good way, yes.
Yeah, take, you don't have to be rude, and we can wear our revolutionary cape with good grace. But these top tips are very useful. As another one, if you know there's an antagonist in the room who's going to upset you, rile you, or cause stuff, never sit opposite them. Because if you sit right opposite them, they're eyeballing you the whole time, and you'll feel all of it.
Never sit next to them.
Yeah. Never touch them, because that'll rile them. But there's, you know, there's ways of positioning yourself in a space that also helps communication skills.
Yeah. And do you think in those situations, almost rehearsing what you want to say is a good way, so it becomes, it's practiced and.
Practice, but authentic. There's, we don't want to turn into the politicians that we just say, once we've got the space, we say what we want. So responding to a question, I think, you know, phrasing your response so it's less than a minute, got an action point, it's got less than a minute, 3 points that people can hang on to, and an action point to go away with, rather than, can we have the nurse's commentary on this? Which needs to be moving the debate forward, bringing evidence and bringing action.
Right, well, that is really useful. Thank you very much for that, Marion. That's wonderful. I wanted to talk, so in kind of preparing for today, I was doing lots of research, and as I said, there's a lot to research about you, Marion, but what's particularly caught my attention is the paintings in hospitals and the I'm Fine project. Would you be happy just to talk to us a little bit about what that all entails?
Yes. So I'm a trustee of the charity Paintings in Hospitals, which is 60 years old. It's not about paintings in hospitals. That's a name that came 60 years ago. So we have more pieces of art than the National Gallery. And whilst these are rented out, and you'll see them in many of your hospitals on the walls, we're more than the collection of art. We're about the connection of well-being and people to the arts and how this can help. So we currently also put art in people's homes, because health is in homes, not in hospitals. And when I say homes, yes, we have care homes, actually also people's individual homes, because people are living with ill health in their own home as well. And we do amazing projects with use of art to support well-being, people living with dementia, all kinds of programs. My program, because I'm the nurse on the board, came from the idea of seeing these images in the newspapers when I was through COVID, of nurses being quite knackered and always looking the same way, with a sort of scrubs and mask, leaning on a hospital corridor wall or sitting on the floor. Gosh, I think Matron would have had a word if she said everyone's sitting on the floor in the 80s.
She would have done. She would have been hauled into her office.
Oh my gosh. But this is not the reality of most nurses. However, when I was clinical during COVID, say to people, you know, how are you? And everyone would say, I was fine. I'm fine. I'm fine, which is what nurses do. Actually, they weren't. They were, you know, holding the emotional burden of work, worried about taking COVID home, or if not working in COVID settings, actually, you know, sucking up all the other work, plus just getting on with it and not wanting everyone to be necessarily clapping them, but actually, you know, could I please have a bit of support here? And I also knew that when we look at art and images, pictures are there to enable other people to see things. This is the phrase, art is not what you see, it's what it enables other people to see. So there's always interpretive. So got a grant from the Burdett Trust, very small grant, and went on a mission to write an educational resource that was useful in supervision for nurses and personal reflection. And it gathers together 10 images from across the world of nurses doing stuff. There's no misery. I think there might be a mask, but this isn't about masks and miserable faces and marks. This is about the joy that comes from work, the places that we work outside and inside, the people that we work with. And those images then can be used to enable us to reflect on what else we could be doing, what we're doing that's got worth, and where else do we want to go. And it's got a lot of theory in it as well about that, you know, the state of nursing and nurses at the moment, and then educational theory and leadership stuff. So it's got some nerdy nurse stuff as well. But this resource is available online. And then I did the evaluation, and the impact of it is it shifts the dial on the identity of nurses. It shifts the way that we see ourselves and others see us, and it sets the way forward to allow nurses to be that more, to be that 10% more than their current structures are allowing them to be, by imagining it to and using it as their sort of restorative way to think beyond where they are at the moment. And that's what led into the Sustainable Development Goals work, because moving on from the I'm fine, what people were saying to me was, I'm fine, and then, okay, you know, let's look at this. But then they said, I'm not seen. I'm here, but I'm not seen. And I wanted to enable nurses to, A, feel they were seen, but more than actually feel they were seen, to actually be seen. And that's why this has progressed onto my next project, which at the moment has no funding, no background, no backing, nothing but a belief that this will happen and nurses will be seen in doing this amazing stuff they're doing.
So can I just clarify, when you say it's pictures of nurses, yeah, it's pictures of them doing their nursing work. It's not of them outside of their role in their everyday lives. It's about images of them nursing in whatever.
Images of nurses doing nursing, but not, right, okay, not masked up at the bedside. The one that comes straight to my head is this amazing award-winning picture, because everything has to have copyright, you know, in all of this. And it's an amazing picture, it's from Brazil, of a nurse in a care home with the healthiest, happiest face you can imagine, arms outstretched, being hugged by a resident who lives in a care home. But within the painting, I can't remember if it's a painting or a picture, but within it, you can just see that there is a plastic shield. The nurse is wearing a plastic apron, full arms, full body. But that invisible apron is blocking a virus, but is not blocking that joy and that hug and that connection, physical and emotional, that nurse is having and that person is experiencing.
Yeah. That's so lovely. And yeah, so kind of the restoration, that, oh gosh, that's, yeah. I'm involved in my organisation in clinical supervision and more recently with a restorative element to it through the professional nurse advocate role. So I'm a PNA now, and all of these things kind of tie in very nicely in that setting, and it's making me think I need to go and speak to our quality matron Sharon. I need to kind of tell her about this and bring it to our trust. And yeah, oh my word, that's so lovely. The other thing about this is that my background's intensive care, and we used to have some artwork that we put up for our patients, and they were moving images, they were called. So they were images of all sorts of things. So it might be set in a field, and it might just be a blade of grass that was bobbing about in the wind, or waves crashing on a beach, stuff that was very kind of generic, that wouldn't evoke memories, unpleasant memories for our intensive care patients. And the idea was that patients and relatives and staff, anybody could look at these images and they would help with that well-being. And in our patient's case, we hoped that it would lessen their need for medicines to keep them calm and settled, and so, you know, make our healthcare more sustainable and benefit our patients by the creation of these. So that all kind of echoes. It kind of fits in with what you're saying there, really, doesn't it? It's very interesting.
We go full loop, Angela, because it's, you know, 2,000 years ago, we hadn't separated the arts and health. It was all built in. And once we started to break the body down to its component parts of, your blood does this and the liver does that, then we built hospitals that said, you know, your brain sick's over there and your leg sick's over there. And our society started to follow the same way. And that, you know, if we tell people to change their behaviours and, you know, run more, smoke less, do this, do that, health will improve. Well, no, it has, you know, antibiotics and sanitation and health promotion have all had benefits, but they haven't actually created the utopia we wanted. So now we're in a space theoretically called the fifth wave of public health, which comes after that, you know, don't do this and do that kind of model of health, which is the fourth wave, which starts to look at the aesthetics, the environment we're in, the way that we behave towards each other, the way that we connect with society, or, you know, or even just sit with another human being. And that aesthetics element is the arts. We had the plays, you know, the Greek plays, in the global south is still, health is still all around storytelling and cultural ways of showing how health can be helped, etc. It's not all happening in the hospital. But if we can start to harness that kind of humanities aspect, I truly, truly believe and have the evidence to show that this aspect of humanity that needs to be part of health will come back. And that was my PhD, so I am a complete nerd about that one. But this aspect of shifting our lens away from the meat of our body and towards how health has a meaning in our life, health and in health, and how we can construct the way that we live our life around, you know, our long-term conditions or non-communicable diseases is crucial. Move away from the cure and the care way
and the
alone to actually look at the community models, social models of health, which community activism has always done, social work has always done. Nurses have straddled that space all the time. But we can be in both spaces.
That's absolutely fascinating. Really, really interesting. Unfortunately, I'd love to chat for much longer. There's loads of things I'd like to ask, but we probably have to bring it to a close. So I'd just like to ask you one last thing, Marion, if that's okay. Well, maybe two. you've said about what good would look like. You've mentioned that phrase, and I want to know, in your view, what would good look like? And the very final question is, what would you like your eulogy to say about you, if you were to write your own?
When a nurse stands in a room, people hear what she says. And when I say she, because the majority of nurses are female, we have an imbalance between males being more in leadership positions. So when a nurse stands in a room or with a group of people, people hear what she is saying, believe what she is saying, because she has the evidence in her hands from education and experience and the expertise of more access to education, and the confidence to speak out and speak up on behalf of improving quality, advocating for patients, and progressing her career. That other people who want to be in that leadership space move out. They don't just crowd the space, but they become allies, so that nurses will progress into have more influence. And that we look at 21st century care. So most nurses aren't working in wards, in hospitals, and most of health doesn't happen in a hospital. So we recognise the variety of skills needed and the sensibilities that go with that, so that nurses are educated to be part of a social justice movement, have ethics in their decision making, and stay in nursing. And they stay because they are valued, their worth is recognised economically, ethically and professionally. And every day they can say, I do this for you as a patient or project or a society, and I do this for me. That's
wow.
Good.
That's brilliant. So, I want to give you a round of applause.
I hope I can listen to that, because I've just made that up at the top of my head. So I need to write that down. Because that.
My goodness.
And what's I think the last thing people will say is, she did good, but she's not done yet. That'll be but I think there's something about you not being the difference. You being the difference, so that others can make a difference. And I would like that to be that she's done, but she's not done yet, because what I've enabled other people to do in terms of competence building or confidence building or creating opportunities, opening doors, creating noise, has said to people, I can do that, and I will. I can, I will, and I am doing it. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I think that is a wonderful way to finish our chat today. It's been really, really, really interesting talking to you, Marion. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Please, people, get in touch if you want to be part of this movement of nurses doing what actually matters.
There you go. Thank you. You've been listening to Green for Health.